So I'll just go ahead and record this, and then if anyone wants to watch it, like, I can send you the audio recording via Dropbox.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Sure. So I'm Lisa, and I'm representing the Living Inquiries. And if you haven't heard of the Living Inquiries, it's the website on the flyer that of this event. And it would be good to check it out. What I'll be telling you today will kind of maybe go in one ear, maybe out another, maybe kind of hook in, maybe not. So going to the website, there's lots of resources there. Going to my website, there's some resources there. My website's a little bit outdated. I need to work on that, but it's not been my priority. So
if only you had the time.
Yeah. Yes. So I want to do first, my cat just jumped in my lap, but I think that she won't really get in the way, I don't think. I think what we'll do first is what in the Living Inquiries we call resting. Resting is what other people might call meditation. Scott Killaby wrote a book called Natural Rest, and resting instead of meditation, but it's quite similar. Depending on your familiarity with meditation, my understanding of meditation and what we use resting for is not to change anything, it's not to fix anything, it's not to escape from our reality. So we use resting or meditation as what's already happening here and now. And I'm guessing that's your understanding of meditation as well. So we'll do a little bit of resting. And I think what I'll do is I'll mute you there. Let's see, how do I do that? Because then it will be my mouse is frozen. Okay.
Your mouse probably freezes when your cat jumps in your lap.
Okay, so I'm going to mute your audio. So if you say anything, if you want to speak, raise your hand because I'll have you muted in just a second. I'm going to go through maybe 10 minutes or so of resting. Just follow along as you'd like to. Get comfortable, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
So, as with any meditation, you're welcome to keep the eyes open or closed. I tend to close the eyes, particularly when I facilitate resting, just because I do. But you're welcome to keep them open if you'd like. And just getting comfortable in your space where you are right now. Just noticing your surroundings, noticing your experience of right now, which is to say noticing thoughts, images, sensations, or energies. And not to do anything with what you're noticing, but just to notice what is here right now in this experience. That might mean a lot of attention is in thought. So you might notice thinking happening, words happening, the voice in the head. You might notice that happening. You might notice flashes of images coming in and out of attention. And then also noticing the space of a body in a chair. And as you bring attention down into the space of the body in this chair, just noticing whatever it is that you notice. Words and images often pop back up continuously. So just noticing as attention goes to thought. Just noticing what's in attention with regard to words and images, and then bringing attention back into the space of the body. Feeling the body in the chair that you're sitting in. Feeling the back of the body being supported or resting against that chair or that object that you're sitting upon or against. Feeling down to the sit bones, noticing the sit bones making contact letting attention drop down to the feet on the floor or the feet wherever they're situated, and feeling that place of contact. Just noticing the space of contact with the chair and the floor for a moment here. Noticing this chair, this floor is actually supporting the body. You can really let gravity do its job, so to speak, and really let the body be held here. And as you lean into that or connect into that, you might notice the body relaxing. You might notice the body not relaxing. And again, we're not looking for a particular outcome, so just notice whatever it is that you're noticing with regard to your experience of this moment. Then dropping further into the body, noticing breathing happening. Breathing is something that happens all day long, every day, day in and day out, night and day. Whether or not we're noticing it or not, it happens. So it can be a very useful pointer to connect to the present moment. We can't breathe in the past and we can't breathe in the future. Breathing always happens right now. So bringing attention to this happening now. The breath coming in, the breath going out. Not looking for a particular way of breathing, breathing just however your body is breathing, just notice that. Keeping your attention on the breath itself and the experience of breathing. You may notice thoughts coming into attention, critical thoughts, instructional thoughts, random thoughts. As you notice that, just notice, so I'm thinking, I'm in thought. And then let your attention drift back into breathing, this experience of breath. And as you connect with breathing that's happening, let yourself experience being breathed, which is to say, the body is moving all on its own with the breath. The chest is rising and falling. The belly is moving as it is. And there's hundreds of other sensations that might be noticed as the breath flows into the nostrils, down through the throat, into the chest and belly, and then back out again. The mind wants to label, and it does a great job of labeling, so you might notice lots of labels coming up. And just notice those. Just letting the mind do what it does. And then bringing attention back into the experience of breath. And following that cyclical movement, the inhalation that naturally leads to an exhalation, that naturally leads back into an inhalation, follow that cycle with your attention. Again, not trying to do anything to fix, change, analyze, understand. Just noticing the raw experience of breathing in this moment. And continue to notice what you notice. It will be thoughts, images, or sensations or energies. Those are the three things that comprise our experiences. So that will be how the data is coming in. Just noticing whatever's showing up in your experience. And if it feels like you get caught in thinking, just notice that. I'm caught in thought again. And then bring attention back into the breath, into that cyclical exchange of air coming in and going out, and all the many different sensations that are noticed as well with that breathing. Keep noticing where your attention is landing. If you find yourself drifting to the past or the future, that's fine. Just notice that. That is a natural inclination of the mind, of thought, of the left brain. It does that, takes us to past or future. So notice that. And then just bring yourself back to this present moment with the inhalation. And as you continue to notice breathing, notice whatever you notice in the space of the body. Qualities, characteristics, temperatures. Maybe emotions. And as you continue to notice breathing happening, noticing that inner landscape of the body, the chest and the belly, you might notice attention going other places in the inner space of the body as well, the legs, the arms, the throat, the head, wherever your attention is going, just follow that. There's lots to feel and experience in this human form. And then let your attention kind of drift to the space around you, the space behind, the space to either side, the space in front of you, underneath and over. Letting attention explore that outer space, so to speak. And let your attention explore as far out as it wants to go. Attention is multifaceted, so you might notice attention way out as well as breathing happening. Those two can happen simultaneously. You might notice that the inside and the outside labels no longer apply in this experience. You might also notice sound happening. So be curious about sound that just naturally shows up in your attention. Without any efforting at all, sound shows up. The sound of my voice, other miscellaneous sounds, coming and going. Effortlessly perceived, experienced. And if you want, you can get curious about what it is that's perceiving sound or sensation. What is it that's perceiving? I'm continuing to become intimate and familiar with this experience here right now. Whether it's thoughts, images, or sensations. And bringing attention then back into the body in a chair, really feeling the body, sit bones in the chair, the feet on the floor or wherever they're situated, the hands resting where they are, the skin of the fingers, the air on the face. Breathing happening. Continuing to notice breath as the eyes open. And just letting your attention go where it wants with the eyes open. Still noticing breathing, still noticing the space of the body. You can just notice if your experience with the eyes open, how it's different than with the eyes closed. Everyone has their own unique experience, and no one experiences anything incorrectly. It's just your experience, your personal experience. And then as you're ready, you can bring attention back to the screen here and just connect here for a moment. It's nice to see some more people here. Hi. So I'm going to go ahead and let's see, Jeff, should I unmute you? You're probably the loudest, but I'll go ahead and unmute you. That way, if it's noisy, I'll mute you again. That's not too bad. Yeah. Good. And at this point, if anyone wants to say anything, ask questions, make comments, this would be a time for that.
Sure. So what I noticed was my resistance to doing anything you said.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm totally uninterested in pointing out one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was limiting. So I'd much rather get a sense of it all happening at once.
Sure. Yeah. So those, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes. So I was absolutely uninterested.
Uh-huh. That is totally fine.
Guidance.
Yeah.
It's not like to give into that would have to, I'd have to close off my feeling of this whole room and what's going on.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
So I don't meditate.
I'm sorry?
I do not meditate. I spend no time with attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah.
I like swimming in raw. Almost.
You like swimming?
Swimming in the whole experience all the time.
Uh-huh.
In it.
Sure.
Not worrying about one little thing.
So that is totally fine. Yeah.
Well, everything's fine. I'm just distinguishing between the activity you were inviting us into.
Uh-huh.
And I'm allergic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else have anything they would like to share? Mind if you don't? Okay. So in the living inquiries, what we do is we do really break it down into very small bits. As I mentioned in the resting, what we call resting, our experience. I'm going to mute that actually. A little feedback. Okay. Just raise your hand, Jeff, or I'm sorry, I don't know your name, sir, but if you have a question, just raise your hand because I'm going to mute you. We, in the living inquiries, we do look at each bit of information that's coming in as data. We're bombarded by data constantly. You know, we're data receiving machines, basically. So in the living inquiries, we really slow down and we take a look at those little bits of data. You know, as I mentioned in the rest, our experience is comprised of basically three things: thoughts, images, and sensations. By sensations, I mean that would include energy, emotions. The visuals would also be in the images section, and then thoughts, words. Thoughts are words, basically, and sounds. The sounds in our head, those we can call thoughts. So a lot of times in our experience, we're really not connected to what makes up our experience because there's so much happening that we don't really know what our experience is. We're not able to slow down our attention enough to study our moments. In fact, it's more like our moments seem to overwhelm us. So in living inquiries, we slow down quite a bit to really notice what's in our experience and to really become intimate with what our experience is. So I'd like just to, as a practical way to explain this work, I'm going to have you close your eyes for a moment, and I'm going to say some words. And when I say them, I want you to notice what shows up in your experience. So again, notice the thoughts that come in with, as I say these different words. You know, notice if images show up. And notice if you feel sensations in the body, maybe a gripping or a releasing or an opening or a closing. Lemons. Your mother. So right then and there, you might notice some different responses. With lemon, you might notice maybe an image of a lemon. The mind is quite visual or sees in visuals. And you might have words that show up like sour or you might not. And then you might have a tangible physical response. You might not. For most people, lemons are fairly neutral, especially, you've got one right there. I have one in my cup too, actually. And then when I went to mother, I saw Francine. I could see that she had a very obvious response, and so that told me that there's probably some data coming in that's a little bit different than maybe the lemon. Of course, it's different because a mother is not a lemon. But with that, we might call that there's a little bit of Velcro. We call it Velcro in this work with the mother. As you see the mother image, you might hear different stories of the mother. You might feel lovely, warm, precious thoughts, or you might feel like, you know, so lots of different things come in just with that word mother. And the reason that lots of things come in is because of Velcro. In our culture, we have words, we have images, and we have sensations, and they all get glummed together. And so all I need to do is say one word and you're in a whole other reality. So in the living inquiries, we really slow down to notice how we're impacted by things that are actually not threatening in and of themselves, but we've made them to be quite threatening based on lots of different experiences. So I'm going to say, we're going to just do this exercise just a few more minutes just so you can get the feel of it again. So go ahead and close the eyes. Kitty. Circus. Chalkboard. Blue sky. Obama. So you can open the eyes. So just notice that as I said, those words, different, they're anchored in different meanings. And that's really what the Living Inquiries is all about. It's really about noticing the meaning-making that we do in our lives. And not that meaning-making is right or wrong. Of course it happens. But what we find in our experience is that meaning-making happens and it leads to suffering. And so when we break down our experience and we look at the words separately and we work at the images separately and then we come into the body and feel the sensations in the body, we notice that those things actually don't bring suffering when we look at them with discernment, when we do it in a very mindful way. So another way, another example of that might be, you might notice maybe you or someone that you know, when they hear yelling, they have a very strong response or reaction. Yelling for a lot of us, or for some people, takes us back or takes people back to a time of childhood where often they didn't feel safe, or maybe they have images of their parents yelling. I had a client today, we used to hide under the bed. So when she hears yelling, her nervous system, just like that, goes right into response. And she is no longer sitting in a chair enjoying her life. She is now a 7-year-old child under her bed, even though she clearly is not there at all. But in her body, in her mind, she is there. So in the Living Inquiries, we very slowly and curiously and carefully, we kind of deconstruct that Velcro that's formed. A lot of PTSD can be met in very significant ways using the Living Inquiries, any kind of trauma. I have a lot of clients who have trauma, PTSD. It's a very gentle and slow process, and quite effective. Depression, anxiety, any compulsion, any addiction. I see a lot of people with food addictions, smoking. When it comes to drinking or smoking, we prefer to send people to the Killaby Center because it's a 30-day inpatient program, and you probably know that that kind of program is going to have much more effectiveness than a one-on-one session. But I do see people one-on-one for smoking addictions and drinking, depending on how debilitating the addiction is. Sometimes it's beyond safe for me to see somebody to stop drinking when they're not under medical supervision. But I do work with people with a lot of compulsions and addictions. Let's see. I'm going to see if there's any questions before I go on. And I'm going to unmute you, Jeff, and there at the center. Any questions so far?
Hi, Jane. Have a seat. Yeah, we started a little earlier this evening.
No questions? Go ahead.
Well, I think I'm interested in, you could say, the fruition of realization. Mm-hmm. As let's say a more dangerous interest than amelioration of, you know, addiction and distraction. Of course, addiction and distraction begs attention, right, and requires a good deal of patient, loving care.
Are you referring, Jeff, to spiritual seeking?
I don't know if I am.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big compulsion in our culture, especially the spiritual culture.
Yeah. No, let's take for a moment all compulsion off the table.
Okay.
Let's say that we have gone to the Killaby Center, you know, for 30 years, not just 30 days.
Okay.
So we're just, you could say, fucking done with all distraction and addiction, just for fun. So now where does our interest turn when we're not, you know, trying to mitigate some kind of confusion or affliction?
So I think it might be useful to... Oops. My cat's a little bit. It might be useful to talk about what you mean by distraction. So in our human experience, we have brains and perceiving bits and bring in data and perceive data.
Yeah.
And our left brain is designed to be oppositional. It's designed to critically think. It's designed to create problems and solve them.
Yeah.
It's designed to have all of that juice. And it's great because we make amazing things, and it also can be the cause of suffering. So
let's say that we have ameliorated suffering.
What do you mean by that?
We're not suffering any longer.
Okay, so, and what does that mean?
That's what I want to find out.
Right. Okay, great.
So we're not suffering any longer, which means we don't have to deal with it.
So
now, where does our curiosity go now that we're through with suffering?
So what I would say is a lack. This is where language gets to be a little bit tricky, but curiosity is just a function of happening. It happens regardless of what's going on, or it can happen regardless of what's going on. It doesn't always, as we all know that. Sometimes there's not a lot of curiosity when there's a lot of certainty.
In the curiosity work, then, is there such a thing as the famed self-realization, or is it not emphasized?
It's not emphasized. We don't do inquiry to have a goal. That's called seeking. You know, people do come to me because they want to have the everlasting self-realization, but it's done because they want to escape the reality of whatever they're experiencing.
Okay, so is it possible to be rid of the seeking, right? The wish to ameliorate or medicate reality.
I think it's possible to. Are you basically asking me, is it possible not to suffer?
That's a decent question.
Yeah, I think it is possible to not suffer. Permanently, I'm not sure. I don't deal with permanence. I only deal with what's here now. Permanence is just a thought. It's just an idea.
So what's here now then is, let's say, your articulation of freedom from distraction, right?
See, I don't think distraction is a bad thing.
Yeah, no, not bad. Freedom from unreality.
I don't think unreality is bad either.
Neither do I.
So I think let me just finish what I was saying about suffering is that in my experience, suffering is wanting things to be different.
Okay.
And yes, it is possible to be in a world and live in this body without arguing with reality.
Okay.
However, let me just say for a moment that we all still, no matter who we are, we all will still have left brains, and the left brain's job is to be oppositional. So those oppositional thoughts don't stop. They can be noticed that those are not reflective of a personal I.
Okay.
So in that sense, the suffering doesn't happen because it's grokked or experienced that it's not reflective of a personal I.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that thoughts stop. It doesn't mean that critical thoughts don't happen.
Right. There's no, I mean, thinking can be thinking.
Thinking is thinking. It can be thinking.
And oppositional thinking can occur.
Absolutely. Everything can occur. When one is not arguing with one's reality, it doesn't matter really what's happening.
Right. So the ease of being, right, as a legitimate kind of metaphor, would suggest that there's no, which might also suggest the amelioration of suffering, because there's no investment or quarrel, there's no investment in unreality, and there's no quarrel with reality.
Exactly. Right. They all just get to be met as they are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
For me, in this work and living inquiry's work and other work that I do, embodiment is very, very much a part of non-suffering. I lived in an ashram for many, many years, and I got very, very good at going what I would call up and out in meditation.
Oh, please gossip. Which ashram was it?
Oh, that's irrelevant. But just to say that a lot of practices, they do engage in an up and out practice. You sit on the cushion to escape reality, and then when you get up, you're like, oh, fuck, you know, now life. So in the living inquiries, there's not that separation of let's rest now and then let's live later.
Yeah.
As we practice resting in quiet moments, that becomes the reality all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be really useful to spend time just resting, kind of train the neural pathways on awareness and noticing, so that when you're engaged in life, that still continues to happen. And for me, inquiry happens all the time. I don't sit down and do it.
Yes.
It does me at this point, but that's because I've been doing it a while. My neural pathways have literally been remapped to do that. But for clients of mine who are just starting out, it takes repetition, like you mentioned before we started, repetition, practice. Those things science now tells us, which we've already known forever, but science now tells us that changes the neural pathways and it changes our experience, our perceptions of the world. Yeah. Back to embodiment, in the living inquiries, we're not interested in escaping from reality in any way, shape, or form. We're actually interested in really connecting with the fine grains of our experience. The subtle most bits that hurt forever, we've just kind of dissociated from. And we can access that through stillness, which again is why we come into to rest. And it's really a practice of embodiment. When I've been friends for quite a long time, I was doing my practice, he was doing his practice. I was doing a lot of embodiment work, and he was just starting to do embodiment work. And I did a session with him, and he said, I think that this is kind of like what I'm doing. Why don't you come work with me? And then I did, and I love it because it's a really embodied practice. It's really about bringing attention into the space of the body. And that is what our culture is avoiding. You probably all know that already, Our culture is a very disembodied culture. It tries to get us to escape pain. It tries to get us to escape sensation. And we are sensing machines. Like, our whole beings are wired to sense and to feel. And yet we live in a culture that wants to live from the neck up. So it's a very big paradox, and it's a lot of suffering for a lot of people. So in this work, we really very slowly and gently get this body to kind of melt and to thaw out a little bit, frozen and disassociated for so long.
So when you say embodiment, you're talking about a sensory type of a deal. You're talking about
I'm talking about being here with everything that we notice. And what we notice always comes down to the three things: thought, image, sensations.
I'm sorry, it came through a little garbled. The thought, what else?
Right, so our experience, if you just think about your own experience, what comprises your own experience, you'll have, it's comprised by thoughts, images, and then the last category is quite large, but sensations, which would also include emotions or energies.
Was that sensations?
Yes.
Okay, it keeps breaking up. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yes, embodiment, it does include being with the physical sensations. It also includes, though, noticing the thoughts coming in and out, noticing the images, imagery that comes in and out. For most people, we don't notice that our perceiving is based on thoughts and visuals.
So thought is part of that, but it's not... And I'm throwing words at you, and it may not be true. It's not so much investing in those thoughts. It's just noticing that there are thoughts.
What was the first word you said? Not what in the thoughts?
Is it not investing in the thoughts? I would think story line of the thoughts, right. But it would be noticing that it seems to keep happening spontaneously.
Yes, that's true, but we also do investigate the stories themselves. Because what we know from science, trauma science, is that those stories need to be dealt in, let's say, dived, dove into. And so yes. You may have heard this phrase too in spirituality. There's this nice catchphrase called spiritual bypassing. We don't bypass anything in the living inquiries. We don't say, oh, that's just thought, forget it. That's just images, forget it. When we do that, we really discount our experience. We discount a truth that we're experiencing, truth with small t. And those small truths, those small t truths are just as important as anything else to this mechanism here.
So it's a way of integration, then, it sounds
exactly.
like.
Yeah, exactly.
Not so much psychotherapy, self-psychotherapy.
Exactly, right. You're correct.
Sense knowing the whole deal.
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
What is the result of that?
It's personal. I mean, everyone has a different experience of that, but for most people, they experience a sense of freedom, relaxation. Honestly, freedom is probably the biggest word used. Just their whole system kind of relaxes.
Excuse me. There don't another whole set of sensations, thoughts, and images rush in the minute you clean one up.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
A whole new gang of
yes.
particles come rushing in. You never are without those three things.
Absolutely.
So what are we doing? And where do they come from?
They just come. We don't know. We're perceiving machines.
That's right.
Do we need to know? I don't know. People do spend a lot of mental activity doing that. And trying to avoid them, basically. But we can either try to figure that out, which is usually unsuccessful, or we can just meet with what's here, which is also hard, is challenging to do as well, but can be done.
But so just to stay on the thought part of the triad there, I'm trying to discern the difference between just going about your daily task and thinking this and that and the other thing, and this thought that in the way that you're speaking about it now. Is there?
Yes, the difference is basically awareness. I'm aware what's in my attention.
So as you're aware of the thinking, that may actually change.
My cat. Yes, so this is how I look at it. No, sweetie. Sorry. How I would look at it. If you're going to have a dinner party, do you want your guests to come with masks over their head? Or do you want to know who's showing up to your party? Like, do you want to be able to see their faces? Basically, all day long, we're running around with masks over our heads because we're not really attuned or aware of what our experience is or our experiences are. So in inquiry, we take the masks off and we go, like, oh, this is what's happening. Instead of having a tunnel vision, our lens widens and much more is taken in. Much more is felt as well, but with the space of the body, that's actually a very lovely thing. It's not scary. A lot of people have a really difficult time with the space of the body, so they kind of try to live in their minds as if the body can be maybe turned away from, or try to do this, try to do that, like as if their bodies don't exist. And they really try to manage their world up here to try to make them feel safe. And none of that's right or wrong. Those are survival techniques. We all have learned those kind of survival techniques from a very young age due to various dysfunctions. And so in the inquiries, we just take a look at all of that, all those ways that we've tried to protect ourselves and kind of block out aliveness that exists through this being, beingness.
So are there tools for accomplishing this, and is that some of the stuff that you're going to talk about? Or?
Well, that's what we, in the living inquiries, we basically, the biggest tool is looking at words separately, looking at images separately, and looking at physical sensations separately. That's part of the what's the word I'm looking for? The process of the learning phase. what we do within that is, you know, each facilitator kind of helps the client look at those different things and see what other Velcro is attached to those thoughts, images, or sensations. Other tools that we do, so with my clients, I do a lot of tool strategy, a lot of those conversations, because it is not easy to be with the body when you're just starting out. And I encourage my clients to do inquiry in between our sessions so that they can do this on their own. They don't need to have me around to hold space for them. In the beginning, it is nice to have someone hold space for you, but then as you become more intimate with the workings of the system, you're able to do it on your own. So I do teach strategies and different tools and whatnot. I teach courses on this, and those courses are 10 hours long. I don't get through all the tools and strategies I have. So you can see that would take a while. The meditation at the beginning or the rest at the beginning, honestly, that is a very effective tool. And I understand that it didn't resonate with you, and that's fine. But for other people, it's very helpful.
What's that, starting with the meditation?
That, I have it on recording, so I'll send that to Jeff, and maybe Jeff can email that to you. It was a 15-minute rest that we did at the beginning. And that rest was basically just to help people notice their experience of the present moment as it is interpreted or perceived with five thoughts, images, and sensations.
Okay.
Good questions.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So you mentioned spiritual addictions, like the addiction to spiritual seeking.
Mm-hmm.
I go to Scott Killaby's website and I hear what you're saying in terms of results and good things that would happen from this.
Mm-hmm.
How does this not just present itself as kind of another carrot that you might want to go chase like any other
right.
spiritual pursuit? It sounds very much like another carrot.
The thing that's really different about living inquiries is that we're not making promises. We don't say, if you do this, you'll get that. Now, our clients say that, but we're not promising realization. We're not promising freedom. What we're inviting people is to come into their own experience and to see what it is to experience this world in this way that we're inviting you to through the dissection, basically, or the unwinding of the Velcro. People have had realizations, and then they want more than anything in the world those realizations to come back and to be the permanent state. And so we never make a promise of anything permanent. In my experience, that word is it doesn't exist, the concept. There's nothing permanent in my reality tunnel, in my experience. I can reference something permanent. I might use the word permanent, but words will never get to that which I'm referencing as permanent. So for the most part, I would say there's really nothing permanent. There's nothing forever. There's no end. That's a spiritual myth that's propagated in a lot of circles. The end of seeking, the end of the final awakening, the permanent bliss. Those are all, in my experience, those are promises that aren't the carrot dangling. We don't propagate those myths in this practice. In fact, in this practice, there's the invitation to constantly experience life and notice the perceiver. In embodiment, we don't believe in an end of embodiment. It's not one day you wake up and you're embodied like that. It's not a thing. It's not a state. It's a movement. There's a movement of constant discovery that happens. There's no final end. There's no, like, you made it. Although, it's paradoxical, because on another level, it's that in some way. But,
what?
That was garbage.
Oh, I don't even know what I just said.
It's a long time ago.
It was.
As usual, it disappeared.
What I was getting at is the paradox. The paradox is that we're not trying to get to an outcome. We're not trying to get somewhere. We're just meeting what's right here. And when we do that, the freedom does So, not because we've gone after it, but because we've stopped going after it and we're just coming into this. So that would be the main difference. I mean, although there are other practices that embodiment work. I understand, though, it does seem like the dangling carrot. It's hard to say more about that other than what I've already said. Constant invitation to investigate one's experience. What is it that I'm believing? What thoughts am I believing? What am I making sensations out to be? What am I not wanting to experience? Shame is a huge component of our experience and of our culture. You know, what do I feel shame about, that I'm not good enough, or I should be more advanced, or I shouldn't be still seeking after all these years. What's wrong with me? That shame really keeps that mechanism, that hamster wheel mechanism, I call it, the mind, the left brain hamster wheel. It keeps it in place, that shame. So a lot of the work that I do with people is really unwinding that shame, that sense of shame.
Hearing those statements reminds me of the individual statements that you might inquire into with the work of Byron Katie, where you identify a stressful thought and then you look at it.
Right.
Similar to that?
There are facilitators who do both work. And I heard of Byron Katie's work years and years ago, and I really enjoyed it. What I didn't understand is that it's meant to be a meditation. It's not to be an intellectual understanding. It's supposed to be very fully embodied. And for the most part, I don't think that people do the Byron Katie work that way. So I think it can be effective to a certain point, and then it's kind of becomes a mental activity. And really, embodiment is really profound. It's really important in terms of really showing up to be on this planet in a way that feels alive and in. So if you have a facilitator who does Byron Katie work, I would say go for it. But I haven't met a lot of that happening. But there are some overlaps, yeah.
Well, that embodiment that you're talking about sounds more like present moment.
It is present moment.
If you look at the work of Byron Katie, it's almost always look at a situation from your past and meditate on that.
Mm-hmm.
And at best, you're bringing the emotional content and embodying your remembrance of something from the past.
Mm-hmm. And we do that sometimes with living inquiries, too. We bring in whatever feels alive in this moment. So if I'm thinking of the time when my mom washed my mouth out with soap, that used to be really charged for me, by the way. It's not so much it's actually not at all anymore. But there was a time when I had a lot of anger at my mom over doing that. And I would, I could feel that. It's actually really hard for me to remember what I used to feel. I'm imagining that I felt a lot of anger at her, and honestly, I'd have to make it up now because it's just not in my system anymore. But I could feel it as if it was happening right now. So in the living inquiries, we don't say, well, that's not happening now. Forget it. That's called spiritual bypassing. We say, oh, let's meet how that's being felt right now. Where does that feel alive in the body? Oh, I feel it. Like I feel my chest clenching. Let's go right into that. Let's feel that sensation. And we really dive into the sensations. There's things that live through our imagination in sensations. So we Velcro, we attach all sorts of meaning making constantly in our days. And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's just what we do. But it can lead to suffering if it's not investigated. So we really investigate it. Yeah, I just want to see, before Sir, or the gentleman who's in my right corner, I don't know where he is on your screen, or Beth, if the three of you have any questions before I go back to the Night Sky Sangha.
Okay. That's the origin of what you said, which was what we signed up for here. Is that derived from looking at the triumphant, or is it just an idea from karma?
Unfortunately, I didn't hear some of your words, so I'm trying to piece it up.
Okay. You said to find out what we signed up for.
What did we sign up for?
on this life. And I'm just inquiring into the where does that come from? You say it with such confidence.
Does
that come out of inquiring into those three legs, into thoughts, sensations, and images? You get a message there? How do you get to the notion?
How did I get to what?
Anything. I can't say that I signed up for anything.
Yeah, that's just a story.
Ah, good.
Everything's just a story. Everything that I'm uttering right now is a story.
Yeah.
There's no truth with a capital T in anything that I'm saying or anything that you're thinking right now.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. It's all bullshit. And not only that, we don't know where it came from, and we don't know what its purpose is, and we're just being used by consciousness.
That's a perspective. I may or may not agree with it, but that's your thought. I tend to not think that, but that's there's nothing right or wrong about having any thoughts.
So we can make anything we want.
If you want.
Yeah, well, people do. We all do. What else can we do? We make up shit. we're meaning-making machines.
We are. The thing is that we can notice that. There is something that's noticing that. There is a capital T truth behind all of that that can be noticed, which means that we can pretend things to be real or we can pretend things not to be, and it doesn't matter either way. When you know in that deep experiential way that it doesn't matter, you get to make it matter for fun. The thing is that for most people's experience, most people don't experience that. So it's really useful and wise and honoring of this humanness to be with what seems true until it doesn't. If someone comes to me with depression, I'm not going to say, this is a game, this is da-da-da, nothing's real. I'm going to be with that depression as if it is the most true thing in the world. Mm. Because that's how we human beings were designed to perceive things as true. So there's nothing more discounting or shameful than to discount somebody's personal experience of truth. So I treat all of that as real.
Now that's for each of us to do.
I'm sorry?
That's for each of us to do individually.
Yes, but it's really hard to do that for oneself. And that's where my job comes in, is I help people I hold the space for them to do that. A lot of people have way too much shame to do that for themselves. Mm. And most people have so much shame that they have no idea that they have so much shame.
That's heroic work. I know. Who wants to hear all that?
It is heroic work, actually. I will say
it's stories. Who the hell cares?
Well, a lot of people do. There's nothing wrong with caring. Caring's a marvelous and amazing experience.
Have you been doing it? Listening to stories?
I'm sorry?
Listening to stories?
Stories are very important.
But I asked you a question.
I'm not understanding your question. I'm sorry.
You make a living. You get paid to listen to stories.
I make a living listening to people's stories and helping them unwind them.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
But in dwelling in these three aspects, if I can say dwell, I don't know.
Connect with would might be more. Well, the three aspects, yeah.
Okay. Is there a certain amount of arbitrariness that goes along with that? Recognition of the arbitrariness of a particular thought, even a particular image or a sensation?
Yes, it depends on the person. So, for example, if I were to say right now, pink elephant, you know, you may or may not be seeing an image of a pink elephant in your mind's eye. It's a pretty arbitrary image. It really doesn't mean a whole lot. If I were to say, you know, well, I don't want to say the worst thing that I can come up with, but, you know, wow, there's a lot to choose from in imagination, isn't there? If I were to say, you know, an animal dying or something, that might have more wrapped, you know, maybe your childhood pet dying. That's going to have more wrapped up in it than a pink elephant. Like, who cares about a pink elephant? But most of our days are spent with very arbitrary thoughts. We have millions of thoughts every minute, you know, every hour, millions of them, and most of them mean nothing. They don't matter at all. Same with images, constant images coming and going. You know, I say pink elephant, I see pink elephant, I say orange, I see an orange, who cares? Nobody. You know, it's pretty irrelevant, pretty arbitrary. If I'm going to think of my great-grandmother, I have a little bit more of a response in my body. I really love my great-grandmother. She was really sweet. Not really charged, not much trauma there, so it's fine. Kind of almost arbitrary, but not quite. If I were to say something like, you know, my brother dying of an overdose, not so arbitrary. That might mean more for me. So there's levels and levels, and we just go into whatever feels true for the person as far as their experience. This is a very, very individualized experience. Nobody has thoughts. We all have thoughts. We all have left brains, right brains, beating hearts. You know, sensory organisms or mechanisms, whatever. But we all perceive differently. So when someone comes to me, I listen to their words about their experience.
So you get into the body insofar as left brain, right brain. I mean, you actually, is this an attempt to shift to right brain?
That's a great question. That's not for the living inquiries, no, but I do my own work with that. I do my own exploration of that. But it's not part of the living inquiries, but it does show up. So we're a very left brain dominant culture. Left brain dominant.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you have any particular easy markers. I mean, I think I can probably think of some, but to know that you're, I mean, it's pretty,
yeah.
When you're just hanging out, you're not apt to say, oh, I'm in my left brain or my right brain. But it seems to me that one is taking dominance there, and I'm just wondering if there's any.
Yes. Sure. Yes. So for me, and this is, again, this is going to be, each person's going to develop their own familiarity, their own intimacy with their being. For me, because I've been doing this work a while, I'm very, very intimate with when I'm very left brain dominant. And what happens for me is I start to feel, I literally call it a hamster wheel. It kind of feels like that. It's like a spinning. There's a lot of movement here. My attention is mainly up here. I do a lot of embodiment work, so my attention is mainly evenly distributed. And I feel a lot in my body and very comfortable there. So when I notice my attention up here there might be a quality, a vibration, maybe it's a desperateness, maybe it's a, I've got to figure it out, I've got to understand, fixing. Those are all very dominant left brain activities.
Does it sort of take its own life, take on its own life, more or less?
Yes. Well, you might notice that in your own experience, absolutely. I mean, we can just left brain into, you know, practically till we're on the floor, you know. I mean, in desperation, I mean, I have clients who are so left brain oriented, they're anxious all the time. They're desperately trying to figure out how to find safety and figure out how to get out of it. Or spiritual seekers, they're desperately trying to figure out how to stay permanently awake. And it's a mental activity. It becomes a mental activity. So that activity is mainly happening. It's the left brain figuring out, trying to get somewhere, trying to understand, trying to know. Anytime you meet someone who has a lot of certainty, who believes in truth, with a capital T all over the place, the Republicans are this, the Democrats are that, Obama is this, or, you know, whatever that, that's a lot of left brain activity. Curiosity, on the other hand, curiosity and wonder, those are right brain. You feel really different. And you can practice those anytime. You can wash dishes at home with a left brain focus, or you can wash dishes at home with a right brain focus. You have a very, very different experience. One has curiosity, openness, expansion. You don't care to find an answer. You just ask questions, and you don't need to find an answer in anything. The left brain has to know answers. It's got to have finality, certainty. The right brain doesn't care. It's out for the ride. But we need both. We have to have both. The left brain's not bad. and the right brain's not good. They're both make up this mechanism, this amazing human experience. But we can kind of use a little balancing, perhaps. So I'm just going to go for a few more minutes. Anyone else have any questions they want to ask?
Stan, you can ask a question if you'd like.
Oh, thank you. Great. Yeah, I would... It's kind of hard. Can you mute your meeting or your place, Jeff? It just makes it hard for me to hear Lisa. Is it all right?
I just did it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was wondering if when you are deconstructing thoughts and images and sensations, do you find any three of those poles the best to start with or easiest, or is it just a matter of what's most charged? Or I'm curious, your actual nuts and bolts.
Right, that's a great question. I was going to do a kind of a sample inquiry, but we just ran out of time because you guys had really great questions. But there is, a couple of videos on the website, so you can actually watch people being facilitated. And what you'll find is that all three components are relevant. I mean, all three of them are part of this Velcro. So you can't just look at thoughts, you know, you can't just look at images, and you can't just come into the body. Some people are really, really comfortable in the body, and they just want to come into the body. And that's actually, I was like that. I wanted to just be in the body. I didn't want to notice my thoughts. I really dissociated from my thoughts for many years. I just really loved hanging out in my body. I was really comfortable there. But it limited my experience because it was like that metaphor I used of the people coming into the house with a mask on. I was not in tune or aware of my thoughts, so my thoughts were actually running me until I was able to really notice the thoughts and look at them. Then I experienced freedom. Although before that, they just kind of had captive over me in a certain kind of way. So, yeah.
So you just kind of, so the process, but through looking and noticing, they kind of unstick so that feelings don't mean what your thoughts are saying and vice versa. And then I would imagine that, the work just gets going deeper. It doesn't stay in this sort of,
Absolutely.
Okay.
In my experience, there is no end to deepening. It's the most amazing discovery I've found. At first I thought, oh, there'll be an end and yay. And I don't believe in that myth anymore. And I experience a great adventure of constant deepening and constant wondering and curiosity and amazement. So, it's just constant deepening, constant rabbit holing or, you know, whatever word you want to use, exploration. Yeah. Very good question. Thank you. Yeah. And I would really encourage you, if you're interested, that the website, the Living Inquiries website, does have a lot of free stuff on it. It has free audios, free videos, free articles, blog posts. I've got blog posts on there. Other people have blog posts on there. So there's a lot of free information on there that you can look into. And there's a whole page of facilitators that do this work. If you have a particular, you know, you like working with men, there's men that do it, women, whatever, the whole older, younger, the whole gamut.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm going to unmute you, Jeff, Jeff and friends. So any last thing before we can just do a couple minutes of rest here at the very end.
Thank you for your patience and care.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me. It's been really lovely. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so I'll go ahead and mute you again, and we'll just do a couple minutes of rest. And in my sessions, resting is really a very big part of self-awareness. It really helps one to become very intimate with what this nowness is. So again, if you want your eyes to close, you can. So noticing this moment here, what's in this moment? Sounds, other sensations, thinking is happening. So notice the thinking that's happening or the thoughts. You might even notice the content of the thoughts. Are the thoughts stern? Are they curious? You might notice that. Again, there's no right or wrong way to think. It's just to notice what's in your experience. And you might also be noticing images, those three things, thoughts, images, sensations, just coming and going constantly in and out of our attention. Because attention is mainly in words and images, like we do spend extra time in the body, so bring your attention to breathing and feel the body being breathed. Feel the air come in the body and out of the body. Feel the chest and the belly. Let's connect with that inhalation and exhalation for just another few moments here. Then bringing attention as you continue to notice breath, bring your attention into the space of the body in the chair. There's breathing, and there's the body in the chair. Sit bones, the back, the hands, the feet, the skin. As you practice bringing attention into the body and into breath, there will be less preoccupation with thought. Of course, the brain that doesn't like that, the mind doesn't like that because the mind is like a spoiled brat that wants all of your attention. Which is fine, you just get to notice that. Like, oh, you just want all my attention. You just bring your attention right back into the body because the body really loves attention as well. And the body is often under-attended. And as human beings on the planet, our bodies are quite an important vehicle for us. So really honoring the space here. And as you're ready, going ahead and letting the eyes open, I'm just going to unmute everybody, but let's see, can I do that? Yeah, and then we can say our goodbyes. Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Sending this recording, and you can do what you want with it. It's yours to use, and I think my email or my website's on the flyer. If you want to contact me with any questions whatsoever, you're welcome to do that.
Thanks for spending time with us. Thank you.
Thanks for playing with me. I really appreciate it. Bye now.
Thank you, Jeff.